Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. In February of this year, the Australian government introduced new mandatory disclosure rules, which require health and medical providers to notify affected patients and the government when there is a serious data breach. Dr. David Carter, a lecturer in law at the Law, Health and Justice Research Centre at the University of Technology, Sydney, has co-authored an article published today by the MJA, which explains the new laws and gives suggestions about some ways in which medical practices can protect themselves and their patients. David is my guest on the pod today. These new laws came in February. How are they different from the old laws? What have been the changes made?
Look, I mean, they are updated privacy laws, basically speaking. So any healthcare organisation or business or even practitioner that was subject to the Privacy Act, the Commonwealth Privacy Act, are now subject to these. And so the real difference here is that it places a new requirement on, for example, medical practices to report what are called data breach events, where in particular circumstances where they've either lost control of information, there's been an unauthorised disclosure of information, or some sort of unauthorised access to that information.
It doesn't matter whether it's access or distribution, it's still a breach.
Essentially, it's very new law, and so we need some time to sort of see how things pan out, but the core of it is the idea that either electronic data that's held, for example, by a medical practice, or hard copy information that's held by a medical practice, you know, financial records, for example, as well as medical records, pathology results, all manner of information like that should be, of course, kept secure and private and used for the purposes that it was given. But, of course, we understand that sometimes through no fault of the practice, potentially, and sometimes through human error, unauthorised access or disclosure or a loss of control of that information can occur. And when that does occur, and a reasonable person would conclude that the data breach is likely to cause some sort of serious harm to an individual, then the law says it's time to let the government know, as well as those who are affected, about that breach and what you're going to do to fix it.
Does it matter how large the breach is? I mean, if one patient's records get out there, does that have to be notified? Or
yes, it could be. Very often, as you can appreciate, what we now call data breaches could simply be about faxing results to the wrong recipient.
Right.
It could be about a piece of mail going to the wrong person. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it could be more dramatic circumstances where hackers kind of get into your data of your practice and take control of it. But in all those circumstances, the core question that has to be asked is whether or not this breach is going to potentially cause some sort of serious harm to someone.
Yes.
It could be financial harm. It could be, you know, embarrassment. It could be other forms of more serious harm. And if it is the case, then the practice needs to think about making sure that they meet their new obligations under these new mandatory disclosure requirements.
In terms of Australia's data breaches, how responsible are health and medical settings for those breaches?
Well, we've always wondered, because there's never really been a kind of formal way of collecting that information. And we've known from the United States that it can certainly happen in kind of dramatic ways as well as less dramatic ways. But in the first quarter of this year, the laws came in February, so for the first 3 months, it seems that about a quarter of all of the notifications that were made came from health providers, which was perhaps a little higher than I think we'd hoped.
Yeah.
And interestingly, 50% of all notifications were due to a human error. And so we're not talking necessarily about kind of dramatic hacking incidents or those kinds of things, although, of course, that does occur. But we're talking about things that practices, practitioners and health service organisations can really make an impact on in terms of reducing the risk of human error in disclosing and breaching these laws.
If a breach occurs but is fixed immediately, does it still have to be notified?
Well, look, that's what we really, I think, is one of the best things about this law, is it makes really clear that if there's a breach, even if it is something that involves some serious information or some really quite sensitive information, if the practice, for example, can take rapid action and contain that breach and rectify it so that it's unlikely to cause serious harm, then that means that the breach is understood never to have occurred and reporting requirements then are reduced. if not eliminated. This is a serious advantage, of course, because before, I think in the past, it was a little unclear about whether or not, you know, cleaning up a problem effectively would mean that, you know, you're kind of in the clear. Well, here it says, look, if you can clean it up effectively, then there's an opportunity for you to kind of skirt around the need to report it formally. In saying that, though, there may also still be a need to report it to either the government or to your patients, for example.
Yeah.
And that's one of, I think, the really interesting parts about this law.
What are the simple, basic things that a medical practice can do to prevent a breach?
That is really what I think is the most important thing that comes from this. Doctors particularly, and other health practitioners, of course, as well, already have a series of requirements about maintaining privacy. If you think about the code of conduct with medical practice, for example, it's really clear that there's a requirement of confidentiality,
yes,
confidentiality and privacy that's there.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, it's been a little unclear about what that might mean. And
yes,
so thankfully, these laws help us understand a little more about what's required. So what I think is most important is, if it is that 50% of the breaches we've seen in the last quarter are about human error, then let's think about ways that we as medical practitioners, we as practice managers, we as medical and health service providers can make some pretty, really small changes to
mm-hmm.
kind of reduce the risk of that happening. So I certainly think probably a really intelligent place to start is to think about having a conversation with our patients. Very often we don't think about talking to our patients about things like this, but if GPs, doctors, nurses, practice staff, practice managers and the practice itself have a conversation up front about what's collected, why it's collected, how we use it, it means that your patients are kind of along the journey with you in terms of forming a relationship where they understand the need for that information to be collected. And not only that, but they understand, I think, pretty clearly from that conversation that you take seriously their privacy. If then you back that up with some, I think, visible and obvious good practice kind of approaches within the practice, so that when patients are sitting in the waiting room, for example, they're not overhearing you talk about other patients, you know, at the reception desk. If in a consultation they can't see other patients' information, it gives a sense of the seriousness, and I think it reassures them that the practice takes care of their data. God forbid, if there is a need to report something, it's done off the back of an ongoing and really solid relationship where the patient understands that their information was collected already, they understand that it was important that it was collected, and they also understand that despite the fact that this breach may have occurred, that actually in their own experience they've seen the practice take seriously their privacy. If you've got that in place, I think that reduces the impact of any breach that might occur, but more to the point, it increases the kind of awareness of practice staff, particularly about breaches. Look, and the other part is really simple as well, which is about making sure that you have a think about and a review of your policies and procedures, and most importantly, that you actually take a real look at how all practice staff, including people who might be your IT staff who are offside or might be contractors,
mm-hmm.
are actually complying with that. You know, it's great to have policies and procedures in place. It's important for accreditation. It's important to kind of make sure that you've got a sense about how you want your information to be stored and treated. But it's another thing to make sure that everyone is kind of sticking to those processes. The reason why that's important is obvious.
Mm.
It reduces the risk of it going missing. But also, if it goes missing, you've got procedures and policies that can very quickly come into effect so that you might be able to, in a sense, clean up the breach rapidly.
The RACGP's Computer and Information Security Standards are available on the College's website, racgp.org.au, in the section called Your Practice. Today I'm chatting with Dr. David Carter, a lecturer in law at UTS, talking about the new mandatory reporting laws. And if a breach does occur and it can't be fixed straight away, what should the practice manager do right off the bat?
I think it's always a good idea to make a very rapid and honest assessment about what might have happened. Don't ignore it. Try and find out what's gone missing or what's happened. Seek some professional advice if need be, your IT service providers, for example, if it's something that involves your IT system. If it's something that's more simple, just talk in a kind of non-blaming way with staff to understand how the breach might have occurred so
yep.
that you can trace what happened. And then make sure that you follow the rules here, which is to say, you know, it's always okay to call the regulator, so to call the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner
mm-hmm.
and have a conversation about what might have happened as you discover the facts, and they're going to be able to provide some assistance and guidance and resources to help you manage that response. Of course, the RACGP particularly, I think, has an excellent resource that practices can use in relation to information management, and that certainly is something that is worth reviewing again ahead of time, yeah, so that your practices and procedures are, you know, in place in case something happens.
Okay, so the penalties for not notifying are much stiffer now, aren't they?
Look, they are. Hopefully, no one ever needs to be penalised for not notifying. But if they are, some of the fines can be quite significant. I mean, $420,000 for an individual,
wow,
and much higher fines for a business.
Yeah.
And that includes, you know, a practitioner working under their own ABN or as a company. So, I mean, but hopefully no one ever has to get to that point.
Mm.
I think what is important really to remember too is that not only are the fines sitting there in the distant future for someone who might not report, but the damage that can be done to the practice itself, of course, mm, and particularly to your clinical relationships, can be immeasurably bad.
Yes,
it can mean that patients no longer trust you with your information. You know, clinical practice becomes more difficult. There could be a loss of business. And really, they're the things I think that people should be thinking about primarily as a motivation to make sure that their information management practices are compliant and are kind of up to speed. Because the last thing we want, obviously, is a breach where someone's information goes missing or and some sort of harm occurs, but also the practical reality of that breach can be very long-lasting in terms of the kind of health of the business and particularly maintaining solid clinical relationships.
So if I'm a GP in a practice with several GPs, and maybe I'm not the principal and I'm not the practice manager, what should I be doing to make sure that the practice I'm working for or working in is doing the right thing?
Look, that's a really great question. I think the most important thing, as I said, is do what you can do with your own patient relationships first to make sure that you're clear about what's being collected and why with your own patients. Because in the end, they're your clinical relationships that you need to maintain and to have working for you. Second, have a really open and frank conversation with your colleagues. It might be other practice principals. It might be just other colleagues who work there. It might be the practice managers to say, well, did you know there's a new rule?
Yeah.
There's new laws about this. Maybe we should have a review of our policies and procedures. And then if you need to move that forward, of course, as I said, the RACGP resources are very good. Also talk to your Medicare local potentially and other colleagues in other general practices, because, of course, they're also very good resources often for just seeing how other practices are managing their information and privacy and seeing how you might be able to make some small changes to improve your own practice. They're probably the best things to do at this point as we come to understand how the law is working. But I suppose also just take the time, as I said, to read up on the new rules, just understand how that impacts on your own ethical obligations under good medical practice, and then start having those conversations with patients and your colleagues and your practice manager. There are rules that are new laws that are based on, you know, similar ones from overseas. There's some challenges, no doubt, that will need to be ironed out, but in the end, having those solid relationships with patients, having them understand the need to collect information, what you're doing with it, means that if, God forbid, something happens, you're going to have a solid relationship to fall back on. And then secondly, just doing those basic things of making sure that when presented with an opportunity to either leave a piece of information lying about or to file it or to put it somewhere private, that you take that option, so that over time all those small actions build up to a much safer practice environment for information management.
Thanks very much for all your time.
Thanks, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.